Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Jim Paul.
And I'm Andrew Metcalf.
We are attorneys in the Ogletree Deacons St. Louis, Missouri office.
Like many other Ogletree Deacons attorneys who you may work with around the country or around the world, Jim and I spend a lot of time focusing on defending managers in litigation, defending businesses in lawsuits, and in our spare time, helping businesses navigate day-to-day personnel issues that come up, like some of the ones we're going to be talking about today.
All right. Well, we're going to chat about masks and face coverings and all the laws and issues that surround those. And all of this is in anticipation of a potential, hopefully, COVID-19 vaccine and the upcoming flu season that's right around the corner. Obviously, this becomes a safety and health issue for you and your employees, and sometimes it's going to interfere with your work or business operations. And disputes, debates, and misinformation are flying around everywhere. Andrew, why is there all this confusion and debate regarding the wearing of masks?
That's a good first question, and not necessarily an easy one. As you all know who are listening to this, every day we are receiving so many mixed messages about what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do as a business. And we're getting those messages from the federal government, from our state governments, from local governments that regulate health and safety. And so let's start with the basics before we consider any of those and how they affect the policies and practices and procedures that you're going to have with respect to masks. What are the basic rules that we might need to consider? Well, as a general matter, right, we as business owners, as business leaders, as employers, generally can require our employees and our customers and our visitors to behave in a certain way. That's as a very general proposition, right? We can have rules. We can have dress codes. We can say that those dress codes require this or require that. Now, you all are listening and you're saying, well, wait a minute, it's way more restrictive than that, right? And of course, it is, because we can't have rules, practices, procedures that are discriminatory, right? Based on any protected class that may apply, depending on where you are in the country. And in addition, once we set those rules, once we have them in place, we may need to make modifications, or here's the magic word, accommodations to those rules based on the disability or religions of people who are interacting with our work environment as customers, or as employees, as it may be.
And maybe even racial issues, because we had a question about beards, too, that came up. So
you can generally have rules. You can generally say that the rules are going to be the rules. You can generally prevent access to customers. You can generally decide not to hire an applicant or to discipline or even discharge an employee who doesn't follow your rules. But at the end of the day, we need to remember that there are quite a few important exceptions to those rules that we set that may cause us to have to modify our playbook for these situations. And Jim, the first one that I think we wanted to talk about today was with respect to customers, right? We set rules with respect to customers. What are the guidelines that we may need to know about with respect to rules that we set for our customers and when we may need to modify those?
So yeah, the rules for customers are usually drastically different than the rules for your employees. So as Andrew indicated, you have rules that you need to put in place, but then also laws that you need to follow with regard to non-discrimination of employees. For customers, you generally have those same rules, but more specifically, you have non-discrimination against disabled customers or patients or clients or individuals who are utilizing whatever services or products you're selling. And the federal ADA Title III provides the rules with regard to customers in a non-employment situation, just like Title I of the ADA addresses employee discrimination issues when it comes to accommodating or dealing with their disabilities. But as a business that's offering a product or service to the general public, we can't discriminate against individuals, customers, clients, or patients with regard to their disability. We have to make sure that we provide equal access to those individuals. And if there are eligibility criteria, if there are rules, policies, or procedures that might tend to screen out those disabled individuals, then we might have to tweak or change or modify or create exceptions for those rules. And that comes into play and certainly applies to masks and face coverings that might be implemented as a rule or a requirement in your business. And so if someone has a disability and they say that they cannot or won't or are unable to wear a mask on your premises, then you may have to consider a reasonable modification or exemption from your policies. And it's important to note, certainly from a local level, a state level, when there is an executive order that requires masks in public where social distancing can't be guaranteed, then we have to realize that we, on the one hand, have to comply with those executive orders as a business and make sure that our employees and patrons, customers, patients are complying with that masking requirement. But on the other, we have to comply with the disability discrimination rules and provide an exception for those individuals who may be disabled. And in fact, a lot of those executive orders have specific language in there that a business must allow a customer to come onto the premises or utilize their services without a mask if it's because of a disability. And generally, at least under federal law and most state laws, you as a business owner can't ask or interrogate or question an individual with regard to what their disability is or exactly why they claim not to be able to wear a mask. Quite simply, the way that the law is set up is all someone has to do is say, raise their hand and say, I have a disability and I don't want to have to wear a mask or I can't wear a mask. And that is enough for them to potentially be able to access your property, access your services without wearing a mask. And, you know, these executive orders could have provided a stronger mechanism for trying to enforce a mask or face covering requirement, but they usually don't. And in fact, they usually include the language that the ADA has said for years that we're not supposed to ask or question or challenge someone. And so there's a little bit of a conflict here between the executive orders requiring masks and then creating exceptions for those who say they have a disability and don't want to or cannot wear a mask. And a lot of you may have seen either our blog article on it or those face mask exemption cards that are really fake. And we blogged about that. But, you know, what those cards say is, I have a disability and I shouldn't have to wear a mask. And a lot of people are printing those out from doing a Google search on the internet, maybe laminating them or making them look like they're official cards. But the reality is that they are not official. They do not speak for the Department of Justice, who's quoted, and the Department of Justice's seal is on those cards, because that is not what the Department of Justice or the federal government has been saying. And, you know, if you truly have a situation where a customer, you know, either has young children who can't, you know, too young to wear masks, or they're individuals with some type of intellectual or developmental disability that doesn't allow them to effectively wear a mask or keep it on, or they have sensory sensitivities, such as being on the autism spectrum disorder, then those may be true exceptions to wearing a mask. And in fact, the CDC specifically gives a few examples of who should not wear a mask or who might be exempted from these rules. And all the CDC says is children younger than 2 years old, anyone who has trouble breathing. Now, that's pretty broad, isn't it, Andrew? Anybody who has trouble breathing, or anyone is unconscious, incapacitated, or otherwise unable to remove the mask without assistance. Now, I'm assuming that you're not going to have many unconscious or incapacitated customers, but you can see from the CDC's exceptions and the examples of those exceptions, they should be pretty far and few between. But we've all seen, again, those fake cards, and we've seen in the news confrontations between customers and employees and other customers about wearing masks or not wearing masks in the grocery store or in any other place of public business. So with regard to non-employee situations, that's where it gets a little confusing. But Andrew, what is the analysis for employees?
Yeah, and that's the landscape for non-employees, right? Our customers, our visitors, other people who are walking into our public accommodations. The landscape for how to address employees with disabilities or who may need accommodations for various reasons is very different in the sense that you have this interactive process, probably buzzwords you all know about. But when we boil down what that really means in practice for how we practice as HR professionals, as people who are training managers who are going to be having this discussion, what it means is that when an employee objects to one of our policies or requirements, such as a mask or any type of other requirement that we have in the workplace, and if their objection is based on potentially a disability or potentially a religious belief, we get into a situation where we want to engage in that interactive discussion to try to figure out what our options are with respect to that employee. And that discussion is going to have a couple aspects to it that, as Jim mentioned, are not necessarily available to you in those discussions that you're having with your customers and with your visitors to your places of public accommodation. In the employment context, under Title I of the Americans with Disabilities Act and under many similar state laws, in that interactive discussion, you have the opportunity to potentially ask the employee for some medical information, right? That's not going to happen in the non-employee context. But under the ADA, we may be giving employees certain forms that might ask the employee's medical provider to certify what exactly the employee needs that would enable the employee to perform the key and essential duties of his or her position. And then once you have that kind of verification that, yes, this employee needs us to take this step or that step or the other step to make this job accessible to him or her, the next question is, would giving the employee that accommodation be reasonable? Would it be an undue hardship? Would it exempt the employee from essential functions of the position? How do we know what the essential functions are? We're going to look at our job description. We're going to look at what the employee is actually doing from day to day. We're going to track how does that employee's day start? How does that employee's day end? What is everything that happens in between that we need the employee to accomplish? And based on that, what are truly the key functions of this position that we cannot exempt this employee from? Right? We're going to look at those and then decide, okay, is there a way that we can modify this job in a way that is going to enable the employee to perform those functions? So with respect to a mask requirement, we're going to be going through that analysis the same way we would any other type of accommodation request. And I think Jim and I probably say this a lot in guiding people through these discussions, is that any type of accommodation request really can be treated like any other type of accommodation request. There's no special type of request, whether someone wants to be exempt from your masking requirement, whether someone wants different access to your building, whether someone wants an accommodation with respect to applying to a job online with you or for a promotion through your online system. We're going through generally the same steps and just modifying them a little bit. So the next step is generally potentially going to be exploring what kind of options there are that would modify the environment in a way that would enable that employee to get the job done. What could that include in a mask scenario? What could that include in a situation where an employee says, I can't wear a mask for this or that reason, and you verified it and you think, okay, this is legitimate, want to explore accommodations? There are a number of things that you might be considering with respect to whether it's appropriate to grant an accommodation. What kind of physical separation can we have, right? You're doing these masks to prevent the spread of germs. Well, if someone is 100 yards away from me, they're likely not to spread germs to me, or at least as far as I remember from every bit of education I had on washing my hands from kindergarten to now, right? Someone further away is going to be a little bit on safer ground as far as the germ spreading. Barriers and plexiglass are a popular one right now, right? Can we put up barriers and plexiglass between people in a way that's going to protect them? What about modified schedules, right? That could be an option to prevent someone from being in close proximity to someone else. And of course, home, virtual, and remote working arrangements. Is that a reasonable accommodation for the employee who we're dealing with? Is that something that we should consider for the particular person, the particular job, and the particular situation that we're looking at, depending on all the facts. So those are all considerations that you might have in mind. And of course, you've heard the term undue hardship. You've thought about that. You've thought about the direct threat exception, the ADA. You may be aware of that. But the ADA says, essentially, if someone with a disability, granting an accommodation would be a direct threat to your workforce or person potentially, you may not have to grant that accommodation. If the accommodation would be an undue hardship, you may not have to grant it. You know, generally, EEOC guidance and the case law will tell you that there may be a high bar to you proving those types of defenses. You really may need to have objective evidence, solid documentation, medical opinions, and all sorts of things to establish those. But they're also part of the analysis, just like any other accommodation situation, to determine what your best option is here. And speaking of options, Jim, what are some other options that might be out there in these kinds of situations?
So if working remotely from home or physical separation isn't feasible, or that's not something that can be accomplished, then maybe you're going to have to look at a leave of absence, or you're going to have to figure out a way to have the employee be off for some period of time. And of course, all of you are familiar with, to the extent that you need to comply, if you're an employer or company with 500 or less employees, with the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that may provide employees for some paid time or protected time off due to a COVID-related circumstance. So leave of absence, whether it's paid or unpaid, whether it falls under the FFCRA, if you have sick pay or short-term disability benefits, those are options. Now, it may also result in terminating the employment relationship or furloughing or laying an employee off. If no other option is feasible, that both protects the safety of your other employees and customers and allows the employee to continue working in some fashion, then termination of the employment relationship may be all you have left. In the customer context, of course, you can set up procedures such as curbside pickup, home delivery, other options that allow a customer to still receive the benefits of whatever products or services you're selling, but yet not come onto your premises without a mask. And so if they can't or refuse to wear a mask, then maybe we can bring the service or the products to them so that they're not on our premises. But Andrew, are there dress code and uniform policies that sometimes interact with this issue?
Absolutely. And as we know and have seen in the news, some people have embraced masks as a new fashion accessory. For some folks out there and been really creative with how they make it an accessory. For others, masks have been an opportunity to share a political statement. And for some who protest the requirement to wear a mask by refusing to wear one, that in and of itself is a political statement. For some, the opportunity to wear a mask is an opportunity to display harassing or inappropriate messages. You know, if we've thought about our policies carefully going into situations like this, these are situations that you've dealt with and that your policies and practices should already potentially address, and that we can use those existing policies and practices as our backbone to continue forward. We've always had the problem that someone could display a message that's harassing in the workplace. We've always had the problem that someone could wear something to work that's inappropriate. And ask yourself, how would you deal with those situations if it wasn't on a mask, but if it was on someone's jacket? How would you deal with the situation if you told someone they had to dress a certain way, but they weren't doing it and they refused? We can deal with these situations exactly as we did before if we have the kinds of policies that really are flexible enough to address them in the way that we want. So this is our opportunity to think about what we want these policies to say and think about how we're going to address these things in whatever context they come up. And in addition to, of course, the political implications and potentially harassing situations that come up with respect to these, safety is also a concern when we're talking about masks. So, Jim, what kind of safety issues come up when we're talking about the mask issue?
Yeah, and so, you know, it's really hard. You have the government on the one hand requiring you as a business, as an organization, to ensure safety for employees and for your customers. And on the other, we have to protect employees' rights or potentially make accommodations or exceptions for employees or even customers. And so it's really a balance between what the CDC and OSHA require of you to ensure that everybody's being safe and that you do have these protocols put in place, including masking requirements, but then also potentially easing up on or changing those requirements when it comes to an employee saying that they have a racial, ethnic, religious, or disability related reason for some exception to your dress code policy or your masking policy. So step back and remember that the CDC and a majority of the state and local health departments that have issued executive orders either require, flat out require in all circumstances, masks and face coverings, or they view it as a recommendation. And so the CDC at the federal level has waffled a little bit and been a little bit vague with regard to, is this a requirement or a recommendation? And as it stands, at least on the CDC's website, it's a recommendation, a strong recommendation. And in fact, the CDC says, and I'm quoting from their website, we are not defenseless against COVID-19. Cloth face coverings and masks are one of the most powerful weapons we have to slow and to stop the spread of the virus, particularly when used universally within a community setting. All Americans have a responsibility to protect themselves, their families, and their communities. And you'll see, if you visit the CDC website, that that's very carefully drafted to not be an absolute requirement, but a strong recommendation or statement that all Americans have that responsibility. But it's important to realize that you as a company, as an organization, may have employees that infect other employees or customers that might infect employees with COVID or some other virus or infectious disease. And then you are going to have potential liability either in the form of workers' compensation claims by employees or personal injury claims by customers. And so you have to balance your liability and risk with the rights of others. And we've all seen and heard about the physical and verbal assaults that one person has made against another in a grocery store or in some public setting. And we have employees that are fighting with each other with regard to wearing masks or doing certain behavior in the workplace that might be viewed as more risky from a COVID-19 standpoint, ranging from dirty looks, slurs, spitting, fighting, et cetera. And, you know, masks aren't the only thing that, you know, is being imposed on employees, but we have social distancing, temperature checks, sanitation, hand washing and cleaning, travel restrictions, and all of those are somewhat left to either self-enforcement by employees or co-employees are going to call out their coworkers, right? And say, hey, they're not keeping their distance or they're not washing their hands for the required 30 seconds. Yeah, that would be proper hand washing protocol. Or, hey, did you hear that Joe went to the lake and had a big party with 100 people over the weekend? And certainly there weren't social distancing requirements being met or followed or masks. And so we have a situation where sometimes employees are pitting themselves against others and self-policing and enforcing this and bringing it to the employer's attention. So all of that needs to be weighed as far as your procedures, your protocols to ensure safety, but also to protect employee rights and potentially own activities off duty or on the weekends. And those things really do clash. And we're just now beginning to see the wave of disputes and litigation and claims resulting from COVID-19 in all these different contexts. And in fact, we've set up a whole practice group and have weekly webinars and blogs, as you've seen, with regard to staying in touch with all of these lawsuits and claims that are being filed. But Andrew, what's going to happen if and when there's an approved COVID-19 vaccine?
Yeah, well, a lot. But with respect to the workplaces that we manage, I can really think of two things that we need to be ready for and two kind of questions that we need to anticipate and start thinking about for our work environments. Number one, are we and can we require employees to get this vaccine if it happens, right? Is this going to be something that we require as a condition of continued employment or new employment? And how do we address that? And how do we implement that? How do we communicate that? And how do we do it in a way that passes muster under the law? And then number two, what are we going to do about situations where people say, I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to do it. We know that there are a certain segment of the population that will not get a vaccine when it comes out and that will object to doing so. And we as employers are going to have to address how are we going to manage the people in our workplaces who decide and elect not to get this vaccine. And again, we're going to be going through a lot of the same processes that we talked about with respect to accommodations of disability and religion in some of these cases, and assessing how we want to address potential modifications to our policies, whether it's reasonable in our particular workplace or not to do that based on the facts of our situation. We're all looking for bright line rules. We're all looking for easy guidelines to follow. That's not always easy to find in some of these decisions, and it takes a lot of case-by-case looks and case-by-case analysis. This is presumably going to intersect as well with the upcoming flu season, and we've certainly dealt with this kind of vaccine issue with respect to the flu in the past. So we have some tips and tricks that we can probably take from the lessons we've learned from flu vaccine requirements in certain workplaces in the past decade and more. So we need to buckle up, stay tuned, and use those as guidance going forward. Right, Jim?
Yep. And we're going to be talking about the mandatory flu vaccine policies that you may have in place or may want to put in place in our next podcast. Andrew and I kind of address that in different ways every year as flu season comes upon us and it's right around the corner. And so stay tuned for that. And until then, good luck and hang in there.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.